Welcome to Social 1776. I'm your host, Daniel Leach. I'm joined here by Bill and Eric. And both of these guys are talking about the language and law and definitions on this particular recording here. And I want to let Bill here begin this conversation we just had backstage. And I'd like him to lay it out just like he did for our audience, because it was simple, and I think it was really easy for people to understand, to begin to put together a bigger picture of this law that we're speaking about. So go ahead, Bill.
Okay. So what I was saying before was we covered a real lot of ground in the first half of this call. A lot of things were said, and I mentioned a couple things about people being able to address their issues at the first instance before something escalates to the point of some whacked out woman pretending to be a judge making all these different kinds of claims. And I mentioned that they actually are speaking a different language, a whole different language. So I was saying specifically about the name. When somebody asks you a name, you don't really know what they're asking. So I would say I do not understand what you mean by that. And don't forget, all these words that we're using could all be used as a trick. Like the word name could be spelt or pronounced N-A-M-E, right? N-A-M-E, name. Oh, well, what do you mean by that? What is a name? A name is not who I am. So I always ask the question, who are you, to anybody? And they will respond with a title or something like that. And that's not the question that you asked, you see? So we're not really even speaking the same language. They speak a complete different language. It's called the Justinian deception, or dog Latin is what they use in the styling and the usage of their quote-unquote names. It's all like a sign language. So I wanted to really review what was already said in the call and lay out bullet points. Talk about everything that was said. Look at Title 28, Section 3002, 15A through C, and see how the United States, not the United States of America or the United States of America, upper lowercase, it specifically says the United States is a federal corporation. You see, so what does that even mean? What do the words even mean? A federal corporation. Federal means contract. It's a contract incorporation. The United States Incorporated and the United States of America Incorporated, depending on how the words are styled, they are a municipal and a territorial governmental services corporation offering essential government services under limited delegated authority. And so when I say you stand as a man right off the bat, or a woman, and I would just call it man because we're part of mankind, not humanism. It's two complete different worlds. So I stand as man. I am man. And I don't even usually say amen when I talk to these people. And so what that does is it forces an issue. And yes, I am starting my own court right off the bat. So they're going to start saying, oh, well, I'm officer this, or I'm officer this, or they always refer back to a title, which is fantasy land. Folks, none of this stuff exists in reality. It is all a figment of your imagination. There is no United States. There is no New York. It is a body politic agreed upon by men and women to be a part of, to live under particular rules that we call laws sometimes, and we're agreeing to live under this body politic. So the criminals that are operating the government services corporations have set up their own body politic and force you, without you knowing or having full disclosure of what has happened. So they actually commandeered your name, which is also referred to as a person. And if you look up in 28 U.S.C. 3215 A, B, and C, you will see the definition of person also. Individual, a corporation, a state, all these could be a person. So when they say, are you this person, your only response is, I do not understand what you mean by that. What do you mean by that? There's so many differences in what they're actually even referring to. So you cannot answer any of their questions because they're all based on presumption. So what I want to do is look at all these bullet points at what happens to people, men and women, when they get into these encounters, just how to ask politely if you want to, and you don't have to if you don't want to. But you ask these questions, and they're all targeted questions to keep you standing as man. And they put themselves into the position of making false claims against you. They have misidentified you as a person. And so they try and get you into their jurisdiction. And so when you operate as man, Eric talked about something before about them being above you. But realistically, as soon as they make the claim that they're citizen, that means they are subject to the body politic. A real definition of citizen is a man stepping in, stepping down to a servant position to help operate the quote-unquote government or the body politic. So a man could step into citizen, but step back out of it when they're done. So getting back to when they make the claim of officer or this or that, and you are man, you actually are their employer. And so, no, they are not above you. And so I'm trying to help people to stay in the position, whether they realize it or not, that they're actually, I hate to use the term above, but they are the employer of the officers. And these employees don't realize who they are. So what happened originally was the men and women of quote-unquote America, the Americans, they set up a body politic. And that body politic was to serve mankind. So when men stepped into servanthood, they became part of this body politic. All for commerce. And then certain tricks and traps happened, of course, because you're dealing with criminals throughout all of history anyway. So that said, we have to get our bullet points together and come up with our process of dealing with these people. And I would like to even set up like a mock court scenario so people are prepared with their words, because everything is a words game. Everything is a words game. And everything is really contracting when you're dealing with these criminals. And what they are actually doing, when we talked about Rick Martin's case specifically, that was brought up. And all that I saw happening was compelled contracting, or they were demanding performance without the ability to counteroffer under armed force. You see, and we have a video of it. That was all done, and the criminals had no problem doing it. But if you look at the written law if you even look at the code statutes, rules, and regulations, the penalty for compelled contracting, felony perjury of their oaths, which is treason, insurrection, and sedition, numerous felonies against those people, all of those are punishable by death. That's what the law says. So how do they get away without having any of these punishments brought to them? Well, they tricked you into being into a position that you know nothing about. They tricked you into being their subject so they could treat you however they want. And yes, it all has to do about the money, as Eric said. They're making money hand over fist, and we have to attack that as well somehow. So, we covered so much in the first hour. I'm trying not to go off on too many different tangents here.
Well, Bill,
of what could be done with everything.
I do have something that I remember you said during this short, brief conversation. You spoke about solutions. I really like what you were talking about, doing a mock trial or, you know, something like that. That would be really great to do, to teach people, honestly. You know, we used to have a group in Rochester, and we used to call it Rochester Law. And they were a really great group of guys. We would get together and we'd study laws, you know, whether it be fighting traffic tickets or there'd be CPS cases. There was all different kinds of things. And that group would get together on a regular basis studying laws. And it was a wonderful experience. And you got to be with a lot of really great like-minded men. And so when you bring up this this mock trial stuff, that is brilliant because I've seen it done before, and I think it would be great to do that for our audience because we do.
I learned under Rick Schramm. Rick Schramm also taught numerous other people, Mike Zingali, Robert Lohman died last October too, by the way, and he was the master of criminal complaints. I'm very familiar with all of Rochester Law. As a matter of fact, I ended up with all the materials from Rochester Law.
Really?
So I have access to all that stuff. However, Rochester Law, they were missing some key points, even though they were very successful in what they did. Rick Schramm actually sued, quote-unquote, Florida, Pinellas County, Florida, for not recording documents correctly. So people have to learn what Eric was talking about before about status. So the criminals, they are making huge amounts of presumptions over people, but the men and women have to learn that we have to put on the record, the public record, however you want to do it. So Social 1776 would be perfect. It would be a public place for documents, or you could file them at the county clerk's office if they accept them, or you could send them through the mail and make your own certified copies of registered documents. And what you do is you create a record. You're the only one that has personal firsthand information of who you are. And then take over your name, the person that they made for you, and you file documents on the record, and so now they cannot use presumptions against you if you know how to use your record. So that's how I say you open up your own court. So once you have this record established, you are always basing what you say on the record. And so when they come at you, they have only their presumptions in their language, and you could just rebut all of it with the fact on the record, because the criminals don't have the fact on the record. They made their own record for you, which unfortunately you've been operating under for most of your life until you figure out what Eric and I are telling people. So learning how to operate or go through life as man instead of person is going to be the crux of the whole matter. So I hope that helped out with what you said before. So setting up a mock court would be operating as a man. I can give you a for instance by telling you a small story of what I have been through. Once I learned all this and all the stuff that they have been doing, I got fed up with these criminals in costumes pushing you around and forcing you to do things against your will. And so a man in a costume pretending to be ambulance driver was trying to kidnap me under opinion based upon hearsay with no verifiable fact on the record. So he said that I went into convulsions and accused me of, if I leave the dentist's office here, I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to cause an accident and I'm going to kill somebody. Well, he set up a whole straw man. And so what I did first of all when he walked in the room was, you know, who are you? You know, who are you? And he said, well, I'm Irondequoit Ambulance. And I said, oh, so when you popped out of your mom, she said, Irondequoit Ambulance? So people might think that that's funny, but it wasn't a joke to me. No, I wanted to know what you were called. I didn't ask you your name. I asked you who you are, what you're called. And he would not answer the question. And so he kept threatening me. I told him he shouldn't do that. But I said, you're not touching me. If you do touch me, I will defend myself. And so he called the quote-unquote police on me. So two men in costume showed up to assist him in his attempted compelled contracting, of which I said, and who are you? And they said, well, we're around the Coit Police Department. I said, really? Is that like the ladies' underwear department? It's like, I hate that. You go to the mall and for some reason you always end up in the ladies' underwear department. And he goes, no. Around the Coit Police Department. I said, that, but didn't I ask you who you are? Isn't what you said a title or something like that? Right, see, they're trying to get me into their language. I don't speak their language. So I kept them into my language because I was operating my own court right there. You see, court starts right there at first instance, and I would never let them get me into their body politic, court, or whatever. The ambulance driver kept on setting up the straw man. You're going to leave here. You're going to get in your car, and you're going to cause an accident because you went into convulsions. He was not there. He was not there. He did not see me go into convulsions at all. So he had only opinion based upon hearsay. He couldn't prove anything. He kept on asking me, do you understand? And I said, I comprehend exactly what you're saying, and I do not understand. Just like Eric said, I do not stand under your authority. No. You see, they know what that means. And he said it four times. And I said, hey, you're only supposed to say that three times. You're trying to compel me to contract, but you're not allowed to do it four times. You're only supposed to do it three. And so these men are looking at me like I'm crazy. Oh, by the way, the dentist, three hygienists, and all the rest of the customers were standing around as well because a lot of people, I guess, thought it was fascinating. I thought it was fascinating as well. So when the men pretending to be officers tried to compel me to contract, I set them up and I said, you won't tell me who you are. If you're claiming to be officer, then do you have the certified copy of your timely filed sworn and subscribed oath of office with your good faith surety bond required by law to be attached to it for presentation to me so I know you are operating lawfully according to statute? You see, I am man, and I'm asking him for his employment papers. If they are claiming to hold an office as officer, then they must comply with the written laws. And the written laws, code, statutes, rules, and regulations require them to have a certified copy of the acceptance of their oath of office to the Constitution. You see, so I'm operating my court. I'm setting them all up. All my questions have a specific reason for asking that question. Another question you could ask right off the bat is, are you free to go? I didn't ask if I am free to go. I asked them, are you free to go? You see? Because they are free to go. They can't answer no to the question. And if they do, then they have to explain to me why they are not free to go. So since they are free to go, you see what I'm doing? I'm setting them up as contractors. Oh, so I see you're heavily armed. Are you compelling me to contract with you under armed force? And are you contracting with this other man pretending to be ambulance? And by the way, is he a doctor? He's trying to force me into a medical procedure that I'm not interested in. So, of course, I rattled off all the laws, right? So I asked him, is ignorant of the law an excuse? So they had this dumb look on their face when I asked them for their oath. And they said, yeah, don't you remember Public Officers Law Section 10, New York Civil Service Law Section 72, Article 13 of the New York State Constitution, Title 5, Section 3331, or Article 6 of the Federal Constitution? And they gave me this dumb look. I said, doesn't it look to me by your non-response that you have no idea what I'm talking about? Wouldn't that be felony perjury of your oath, which is treason, insurrection, and sedition, and numerous felonies against me? Because if you are claiming to be officer and you signed an oath to uphold the law, then you have to know what the law is. Otherwise, you committed felony perjury. You can't agree to something if you don't know what it is. And not one of them has a clue what they signed up for. Now, I believe a lot of the guys and women try and join for the right reasons, but they're totally corrupted right off the bat. So this is what I'm talking about as far as setting up my own court. I set them up, and then my next statement was, wouldn't it be a great idea at this point to get your supervisors down here post-haste with the oaths and bonds liable for the felonies being committed against me right now, and the treason and the insurrection? Are you kidding me or what? You guys want to talk to me about something? I was just at the dentist getting my tooth pulled, and now I got this one criminal over here trying to kidnap me, and you guys are here under armed force trying to compel me to contract with him, and I'm not interested in contract with him. All of his questions are based upon hearsay with no verifiable fact on the record. That's another great question to ask them. Besides, sir, who gave you permission to address me? But doesn't your line of questioning assume facts not in evidence? That's a great opener question when somebody starts questioning you. Doesn't your line of question assume facts not in evidence? Of course they do, because they're misidentifying you as one of their misters, a merchant marine officer, or one of their employees, or one of their citizens, but you never admit to any of that. So, I'm going to stop there and let you ask questions at this point.
Well, I mean,
if anybody's got any.
I would definitely say that if somebody was to want to learn what you're using and doing, where would you suggest that they first start to learn take back their rights, to know who they are, to define these terms. You know, you obviously knew these things, these laws. Where did you start? Where was your beginning as an example to other people for them to get started? If they're interested in learning how to do this, obviously, you know, they can listen to programs like this, but unless they get in and reading the books and knowing where to begin to understand who they are, what would be your first suggestion?
Well, you know what? That's a great question that we should sit down and write bullet points for to answer that question.
Yeah, let me jump in.
How I did. Okay.
It's right here. The books are too complicated. Bill is really the expert at simplifying things. He is, yes, rattling off a couple of statutes and codes and articles from the Constitution, but ultimately it comes down to real simple. Our point is super simple. We're man on land. They're corporation under maritime admiralty jurisdiction, UCC law. You notice how Bill said they're operating under commerce. Everything's about commerce and contracting. When you're under commercial or contract law, that's called UCC law. It stands for the Uniform Commercial Code. It's very complex. It's all loaded with statutes and titles and presumptions that Bill was talking about. I think this is the place that we can teach people. I would suggest that we continue with this call here tonight and a regular one all in the future on a regular basis to teach people simplicity. I was kind of thinking the first thing that came to my mind is you want to read the Bible. But God didn't create a bunch of garbage and layers of statutes and all this witch's court and all these different things that we got to know to go in and then operate and all this stuff. That's for the attorneys. That's how they overcomplicate things. I'll give you a great example. There was a recent lawsuit in court where a man named, and people probably saw this video, it's the Buffalo business owners stand up to Cuomo lockdown orders and chase out the sheriff and the health department. If you type that into YouTube, you'll see the video that went viral. I think it got like 20 million views in the first couple of days. Once again, Buffalo business owners stand up to Cuomo lockdown orders and chase out the sheriff and the health department. And you'll see them chasing the sheriff and the health department out of a private business. It's called Athletes Unleashed, my friend Robbie De Niro. And Robbie and Pete Harding and Nicholas and some other people, Joe Palladino was there and a whole bunch of other people were there, and they stood up to the sheriff and the health department when they came into a private meeting after hours at a gymnasium and tried to say, you can't have this meeting here. There's more than five people here. There's more than 10 people. And they said, get out, get out, get out. And they chased the sheriff and the health department agents, acting like deputies, and the health department workers, who were nothing more than men and women ordering other men and women around. And they had no lawful authority to do that. And they got chased out. So that Robbie decided he was going to hire an attorney named Paul Cambria. And Paul Cambria took this to court. And it took them an hour and 45 minutes to basically make the following statement. Walmart has 6% COVID spread, and the gymnasiums have 0.6%. So, like, long and short, Walmart had 10 times the amount of COVID cases spreading at its stores as the gymnasiums did. Why are the gymnasiums closed and Walmart's open? That's all I had to say. Walmart's got 6%. The gymnasium, Robbie De Niro's gym, has 0.6%. Walmart's got 10 times more COVID cases than Robbie's gym. Why is Robbie's gym closed and Walmart is open? Why? That's all he had to say. It took him an hour and 45 minutes to say, Your Honor, as we look at the numbers here, we go over the time period of the last 9 months, and we see them from the statistics from the New York State Department of Health, blah, 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 blah. You know, overcomplicate things to the nth degree. They don't know how to simplify. They do know how to simplify things, but it doesn't make them money. So that's why you get into the witch's court and the idiot attorneys are going to overcomplicate things. I think it's up to me and Daniel and Bill, who are here tonight, to help people learn the simplicity of who you are, what you are. It's really not too complex. You're a man, I'm a woman. We're no different from the witch's court and the Nazi sheriffs and all these other people who are trying to put themselves above us. It's real simple. Now we can go over. So ultimately, I don't know where to tell people to go to learn. You don't, and you shouldn't have to go anywhere to learn who you are. You're Daniel. No, you're a man, a really caring guy, a spirit in flesh named we call Daniel, for lack of a better term. Bill's a really caring guy. He's a Holy Spirit in the flesh. We call him Bill for now because we don't know what else to call him. And you can call me Eric and whatever you want. But it's really quite simple. And it's all about complexity and making us think that we got to go to some dictionary or some huge book full of terms and this and that and the third to know who we are. I would put forth the thesis that we're all really simple and we're trying to operate in a complex world. And the art is to simplify it and then stand your ground on that simplicity. And then just keep standing your ground, going back to the fundamentals. Don't let them suck you into their complexities of, well, you're a person, and, you know, no, I'm not. I'm one of the people. I'm not a person. We could get into all those terms and stuff. But, you know, I mean, it would help if people knew some of the tools that the enemy uses, because often you can use some of their tools against them. Like Bill mentioned, the public officer's law, the civil servant's law. They both have provisions that require these sheriffs and these health department workers and these judges, these people with titles that like to make themselves above us, that require them to hold to an oath to the Constitution. They require them to do the right thing. They require them to be honest. And they violate all that stuff. So they bury themselves in complexities and try to get us off our game. We have to keep reverting back to the most simple, fundamental concepts of liberty and freedom. And I think it's more simple than they're trying to make us. They want us to get involved in the bogged down in the mud of procedural garbage and whatnot. And I think that's where we end up losing the battle, is because they got their complexities and their procedure down in their judicial procedure rules and their Black's Law Dictionary, which is thousands of pages, and this and other millions of court case precedents that they all know through LexisNexis and West's Law and American jurisprudence. And ultimately, that's their game. We got to play our game, which is simple. No victim, no crime. I'm man. You're servant. You're sitting above me? I should be sitting above you. Can we put the bench down here and have you sit down there, and then you all try to make your case to me because I'm your employer, as Bill so correctly put it. We're the boss. They're the servants. Hey, trooper, you, and I've said this to him, and this drives him bananas. Try to tell a cop this. Hey, you work for me. I don't work for you. Oh, boy, they don't like to hear that. They want you to be part of their military. You're underneath them. No, I don't think so. You work for me, trooper. I don't work for you. Judge, you work for me. I don't work for you. And you can say it politely, like Bill said, or not. The more polite you are, the better it's going to work, because then you're not going to give them an excuse to say contempt or lock you up just for disrespecting them, which would be a BS charge. But, you know, you don't ever want to give them the ammunition to use against you. So always be polite, professional. It also gives you the high ground. And if you get it, you know, people are going to respect those who stay on the moral high ground, who even in the face of where it might be easy to get angry or, you know, flying off the handle, you don't. You keep your mind, when all around you are losing your head, you keep your head about you. And that's how you retain respect of the people and the moral high ground, and I think God's blessing. But ultimately, it's very simple, and I think complexifying it is, overcomplicating things is exactly what the enemy wants us to do. So there's the long answer to your question, Daniel, that, you know, you can point to a lot of books and a lot of stuff, but ultimately, simple is best. Less says more. Does that make any sense?
It certainly does make sense, obviously, but ignorance of the law is no excuse. So we definitely need to learn the law. We need to learn how to represent ourselves in a court of law.
Well, here, hold on now. Well, the law is very simple. Laws are not statutes. Statutes and codes and rules and regulations and executive orders and mandates, all of which you've been hearing a lot of lately with COVID, are not law. The law is really simple, and that's why the Constitution is the supreme law of the land under, what is it, Article 2, Section 6, or is it Article 6, Section 2, where that's the supremacy clause that says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And they did that for a reason, to put that over and above all the other bogus garbage statutes that might come along down the line, and boy, have they ever. The New York Book of Codes, Rules, and Regulations is thousands of pages. The cops carry it around, and they can open up and find anything. You can be a criminal by walking out your door in the morning. So ultimately, the law is the Constitution. And did you notice that an average Joe like you, me, Bill, or anybody else could read the Constitution and basically understand it, where you can't read the modern statutes and the stuff is so complicated. They're the master of the run-on sentence. There's commas and clauses, and it runs on and on, and by the time you're halfway through a sentence, you've already forgotten what the sentence started out as, and they change concepts and take turns and do deviations throughout these long, long run-on sentences and these long, enormous statutes and clauses. I mean, just read this stuff. It's impossible to digest, and they do that on purpose. That's their game. We like to simplify and say, hey, you know, these are the fundamental precepts that we have to stand on. If you want to practice law and be an attorney, go to law school, get the bar card, and join the enemy. That, there's your answer. If you really want to know how to operate in the courtroom under their sandbox, you're going to have to join their team mostly to do it. If you stand on your fundamental concepts like Bill was talking about, that's a much more solid ground to stand on. It's much simpler. It doesn't give them anything to grab onto. And you're never going to, you know, I don't think you're ever going to win trying to play their game. You can join the enemy and play their game, but I think there's a point where your knowledge of how to operate, you know, drags you right into their sandbox, so to speak, and you better be an expert when you're there, or you're going to wind up like Rick Martin, getting locked up for contempt for pretending to be a lawyer and all that other garbage. So keep it simple. Keep it simple, all right? Kiss. Keep it simple, sweetheart. Keep it basic. Stand on your fundamental rights and concepts. And I think one thing that we have to really educate people, no victim, no crime. Society cannot be a victim. If you're not hurting somebody actively in what you're doing, then they can't say that that's breaking any law. They can't prove that you're making somebody else catch COVID by not wearing a mask when you walk in the store. There's no proof. There's no evidence of that. Like Bill says, what are the words you use, Bill? You're making a claim based upon hearsay without any verifiable evidence.
Opinion based upon hearsay. I would let me address the contempt issue.
Sure.
That was brought up. I'm going to hold you for contempt, is what she said. I'm holding you on contempt. Objection. Would that be civil or criminal contempt? You see, because I'm keeping it easy, and you said no victim, no crime. Right. Okay, and no contract, no agreement. So, sir, I would call her sir, too, by the way, officer. And so, are you talking civil or criminal contempt? Which contempt of court are you talking about? And so that would, she should answer the question, well, it's criminal contempt. Okay, well, can you show me the injured party? Criminal is always based on an injured party. Oh, no, I meant civil. Oh, civil? Oh, can you show me the contract? Yeah, let's
go the contract
line by line.
Exactly.
Boom, no contempt. Okay, no contempt, because I objected. You can't tell me anything, so you don't have any contempt. And so because you're speaking a different language, I don't know how to respond. And yes, I told three quote-unquote officers, if you want to refer to them, three men in costumes, pretending to be officers, do not touch me. You do not have permission to touch me. Didn't I request you get a supervisor down here right away with the oath and bond liable for the felonies being committed against me? Right. You do not have permission to touch me. Who even gave you permission to address me? You don't go running into your boss's office and make accusations against him. See, start acting like the employer sometimes as well, you know. Anyway,
yeah.
I wanted to hit the point and reiterate what Eric said on no victim, no crime.
Let me continue on that line. Okay,
yeah.
So Bill said, you heard what Bill said. Is this civil? Is this criminal contempt or is this civil? I'll give you kind of a very similar story that we actually used in court for the Wayne Mosier's case. Wayne Mosier was a country junker. He lived up on a hill in the middle of nowhere, had a lot of stuff in his yard, you know, spare tires and this and that. Nothing was toxic. Nothing was bothering anybody. He had a dispute with the neighbors, some kind of feud, and they kept calling the code enforcement guy. And the code enforcement guy kept writing him fines. You know, every day it was $250 a day for like a year and a half. He was going to owe like hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. So we went into court, and I just went with him to help him represent himself. I didn't represent him because I'm not going to get into this, hey, are you licensed to practice law? I just assist people in their own self-representation. So I said, hey, Wayne, something you might consider, you know, asking him is, is this a criminal charge? Because it was a code violation, okay? There was no victim. Nobody was being hurt by Wayne having a bunch of, you know, old washers and dryers in his yard and just junk. And you couldn't even see it from the road. You had to drive up the hill to his house to even see it. So it wasn't an eyesore. There's no case anybody could make that he was hurting anybody. So I said, ask the DA, the district attorney, is this a criminal charge? And once again, we're setting them up. It's like Bill said, your questions are set, backing them into a corner. So I said, Wayne, ask him if it's a criminal charge or a civil charge. Okay, and I knew where this was going to go. And so Wayne did it. When he went up there, you know, I sat in the gallery and just watched, and Wayne went up and said, I forget what the DA's name was. He called him by his first name. Hey, Mike, he said, is this a civil charge or a criminal charge? And of course, and I knew what was going to happen because they didn't know we were really on to them. And so I knew they were going to say, oh, no, don't worry. It's just a civil charge. It's not criminal. And that's exactly what the DA did. He goes, oh, no, just a civil charge. No biggie. You know, it's not a crime. It's not criminal. Oh, great. Then this is a commercial action under UCC law, correct? And the DA's turned completely red in the face because he knew the next question was, well, if it's a civil charge and we're under commercial, if it's a commercial violation, we're under UCC law now, not the criminal statute. This is not a crime. This is not a criminal charge. This is a civil charge. This is a commercial action. Civil matters are all commercial. And they go by the UCC law, the Uniform Commercial Code, which I mentioned before. So and so as soon as he said, is this a criminal or civil? And the guy said, no big deal, Wayne, it's just a civil matter. And Wayne said, oh, so we're under UCC law now. It's a commercial action. And he knew, the DA just knew the next question was, show me the contract. Because if you're going to go after anybody in a civil action, you have to show that they contracted with you. Where's the contract that they agreed to anything? You just can't come out of left field and say, hey, that person owes me money under a civil action, even though you didn't have any contact or contract with them. So the DA just completely turned white and, as it goes, turned red, and he couldn't answer the question. Ended up long and short that charge. They dismissed the whole thing. We caught two judges in a row for not having their open bond filed. How do you like that? James Ames, the judge of Andover, New York, and Sandra Camera, the judge for Alfred, New York, where the university is, Alfred University, both had failed to file their oath of office, which is an oath to uphold the Constitution, pursuant to the New York State Public Officers Law, which Bill mentioned before. There's a public officers law in New York that says anybody holding office has to file an oath, and it can be found right online. We got it right in our criminal trespass warning, if you want to see it. The last page of our criminal trespass warning at courtroomwatch.com. And we serve that on everybody. We say, hey, we know you filed this oath, or you didn't. If you did, we're holding you to the oath. I'll get to that in a second. And if you didn't, you're in violation of the public officers law. So you're, and in the public officers law, it actually says any public official, any public officer who neglects or fails to file their oath, which says, I will uphold the Constitution, their position is vacant. It's actually Section 30.1. It says creation of vacancy. And it says if they don't file that oath with the county clerk within 30 days after beginning their term of office, then their office is vacant. So literally these judges who didn't file their oath, their position was empty. They weren't operating as a lawful judge. It would be like you or me having court in our living room and telling the state police, hey, go bring those people in at the point of a gun, and I'm going to fine them and we'll make them pay. That's exactly what they were doing.
On top of that, taking it to the next step, since they are in violation of their oath and their office is vacant, they are now impersonating an officer. Which
felony.
Is punishable by death. It's a felony. It is a felony. Look
right.
At the punishment for impersonation.
There you
that's
go.
That's what they're doing. When you claim to be a citizen, by the way, you are impersonating as well. So they got everybody for felony perjury.
That's
so
why.
As soon as you claim to be a citizen does not exist. You cannot be a citizen. It's a fiction on a piece of paper. You see?
Yep.
All right. So, anyway.
You're right on that. Now, one more thing. If their oath of office is duly filed, and you can find their oath of office current and updated and filed at the county clerk, then you can take that oath and write accepted and sign your name on it and return that to the person who filed it, the judge or whoever you're talking about, whatever office, public officer that is, and you can formally accept their oath, which enters you into a contract with them. That's a contract. Their oath is a contract that's saying, I swear to uphold the Constitution and be a quote-unquote judge or pretend to be a judge for this amount of time and give the people justice and due process in the American way. Well, that oath that they filed that says they're going to adhere to the Constitution is a contract with the people saying, I'm going to obey the Constitution and do the right thing and be a good old judge, and I promise to be your best friend, and come on into the witch's court, you'll have a great day. And that's a contract. So when they do file that, and you can file that, just write accepted and sign the name, and you accept that contract, and guess what? Now they have a personal binding contract with you, and if you remit that to them, and they breach that contract, I mean, go outside their oath, or violate their oath, or rip somebody off, or go against due process, or start screaming, this is my court, or this court isn't burger, or all the other things the judges are doing, then they're in breach of contract. And then you can sue them for breach of contract once you accept that oath. But you have to formally accept that oath with them. So that's another neat little tactic you can use if you do find that their oath is duly filed with the county clerk. Go ahead.
So since we're on the topic of citizen, a lot of times throughout the movement that we're involved in, there's a thing called sovereign citizen, and we've all heard the term. We've probably been accused of being sovereign citizens. Now, what's the difference between a sovereign so-called citizen and an American national? Like,
they're confused in their terminology. That cannot be sovereign and citizen at the same time. It is an oxymoron.
Yep.
My only response to that would be, do I look like a police officer?
Right.
That's what my response to that is. Do I look like a police officer to you? You cannot be sovereign and you cannot be citizen simultaneously. It doesn't work.
Right. Because the word sovereign means independent, and the word citizen means, like we discussed, a subject.
Right.
So you can't be, sovereign, which is good, and citizen, which is a subject or a slave or a serf or a member of their political community. You can't be both at the same time. Like Bill just said, it's an oxymoron. The two words mean the opposite of each other. Sovereign means free, more or less, and I'm just condensing it. And the citizen means a subject. So you're either free or you're a subject. Now you could be a citizen subject or a citizen member of the government, or you could be a free, sovereign, independent man or woman, but you can't be a sovereign and a citizen at the same time. Anybody who accuses somebody of that doesn't know the language or is hoping that you don't know the language.
Sir, I believe you need a mental evaluation.
Psych eval.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now,
so
let's take what we just said in the last hour, and now let's look again at Rick Martin's case, which brought up this whole entire discussion to begin with. How much more fun and different would that whole case be, that little video that we saw, if they entered into it correctly with everything that was just said, all the bullet points, have all this on the record, the oaths, the accepted oaths filed in the court, or the lack of the oath, and if they have a lack of the oath, then that has to be filed on the record, and that judge should be arrested immediately for impersonation, okay? And we have, and you're all witnesses to all that. If she does have an oath and goes off like she did, that's felony perjury of her oath, which is treason, insurrection, and sedition, and numerous felonies. She committed numerous felonies. That woman she is the one that should have gone to jail. And so that would all be on the record. You bring in your paperwork, and now everybody there has personal, first-hand information on what happened. As soon as she violates her oath of office, she no longer holds that office, and she's impersonating officer. The whole game changes. And so when you start talking like this right off the bat, I think they think twice. These men decided not to touch me when I did all this, and the two criminals in costumes that claimed to be the department, the ladies' underwear department, they left, and they looked at the other guy and said, "You're on your own, buddy, and we're out of here." And they just turned around and left. And then the other pretending to be ambulance, the guy was pissed. He wouldn't leave right away either. And I said, "Now you're criminals, you're gone, and if you touch me, I'll defend myself." Just saying. I said it right in front of the other cops, too. "If you touch me, I'll defend myself." But that was after a while. So the point there is, as soon as they violate that oath of office, the office is vacant that they claimed to hold. Now, even whether they have their costumes on or not, they are impersonating an officer. And they've committed high crimes and misdemeanors.
Excellent presentation, Bill. I'm going to throw in, we're at 57 minutes and 30 seconds, so we're going to get chopped in about 2.5 minutes. Let me throw out one little quick thing here, if it's not going to take too much time. One thing that we may like to do when we go into court, now as Bill's saying, you got to catch this stuff at the outset. If you wait till the time when the contempt hearing is coming up, it's usually late. The judge is going to be short with you. They're going to chop you off, not let you speak, etc. Early in the proceedings, you may want to challenge. You may want to ask for a status hearing, and the judge is going to, when you come up and the judge.
Bingo. Number one.
Do you understand the charges against you? I say, first of all, if it's charges, please bill the Vicar General because they're the ones who handle the billing. But I do not understand, and I would like a status hearing. The judge is going to say, why do you want that? You're going to say, well, with all due respect, I need to challenge the jurisdiction of this court by challenging the presumption that I'm a 14th Amendment citizen subject. I'm not. I'm an American national, and no political status, such as citizen or any other word, can be forced upon me without my consent, which I have never given. So I'm not disputing my status as an American and a free man or a man, but I am disputing the fact that I'm a citizen, which would give this court no jurisdiction over me whatsoever. And when I get to the appeals court, after whatever happens here, the appeals court is going to want to see that I challenged jurisdiction. So I'm doing it respectfully, but I need a status hearing ASAP before this proceedings goes any further. Bill, your comments on that in 1 minute?
No, I love the status hearing. That would be one of the first things that you have to do. And I would not give them any ammunition, though. I would not say I would like to challenge whether I'm a New York citizen or a citizen or whatever. I would never bring any of that up. I would just say I believe I'm being misidentified.
Okay.
I believe there's identity theft going on here.
And they're going to know where you're going with that.
They're going to know where I'm going with this.
Beautiful. 59 minutes and 35 seconds. We got 20 seconds. Daniel, we want to close it out, and we'll pick up another call in the very near future and dissect it some more.
First of all, I want to say thank you for you guys being here and offering your knowledge to the people that are Americans, American nationals, or American national wannabes that call themselves citizens.
Yep.
Secondly, I want to bring up David Pruitt and Pruitt's Tree Resin. They're a sponsor of our program, and you guys got to go and check them out. David Pruitt, Pruitt's Tree Resin. And thirdly, I'd like to say that what you guys were talking about here, it would be really great if we could make a flyer or documents that people could read, because a lot of people are visual learners instead of audible. And I think that would be great to have both things here.
Will do.
So, anyways, that's pretty much what I would like to have to say. And I think we're going to pretty much be hanging up here in probably like 30 seconds. But anyways, Want to say one more thing. Thank you for our audience, for you guys, all your questions. There's a lot of things that are happening with Social 1776. I want to thank all the people that are subscribing over there and putting videos down, and the new people that are getting involved with our program here online. It's been great, and the discussions are wonderful. So,
beautiful.
Anyway, that's it. God bless, and lost for words.
Love you, buddy.
Tomorrow.
Thanks, Daniel. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Daniel.
All right. Good night.
God bless
you.
Good night. Bye-bye.